so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Anything's possible!
RSG Renegade Radio. Where real guys talk real sports. Allow me to introduce the illustrious three-man booth.
I want winners.
What's your name, boy?
Mark the Game Changer.
What's your name, boy?
D-Well.
Now, ladies and gentlemen.
TLT Sports PhD.
The world famous.
Ray.
They are who we thought they were.
We need more dollars.
RSG Renegade Radio. The floodgates is about to open.
Everybody has an opinion.
A man must have a code.
We're taking RSG to the next level.
Hello? You play to win the game.
You could gripe about Mike's game, but I don't see shooting percentage being it.
I mean, I'm not griping the third overall player on my list.
Now, I blame it on Nintendo. It's provocative.
He's real making excuses. You know, we're not going to make any excuses.
You need to move more like a doll. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes. Oh, be a dog. Can't wait. Can you dig it, sucker?
Why, yes. Yes, I can dig it. Welcome to the Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports. RSG Renegade Radio. I am your host, Marcus the Game Changer, one third of the illustrious three-man booth. Tonight, we had to bring in a pinch hitter. I'll introduce him in a moment. But first, let me introduce Phil T, sports PhD. Poland is down for the evening. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well, Game Changer. I got a couple of quick points to make. First of all, shout out to D-Wills out there. Enjoy yourself, homie. Look forward to having you back next week. Second of all, it's like Christmas again in April. I was watching the ball game on Sunday, and Hubie Brown, the classic coach, he said the painted area four times within an hour span. And I said to myself, playoff basketball is almost here. So I'm very excited. I've been bouncing off the walls waiting for this moment.
Excellent. So he's all ready. He's all good to go. He's got his juices flowing. He's ready to roll. Now I'd like to introduce our pitcher this week. As PhD mentioned, D Wills is out doing some family things, which we definitely promote. You know, we're all regular guys. We're all regular dudes who have 9-to-5s outside of what we do on the sports radio. This is something that we really enjoy, something that we really love to do. But sometimes you have to take nights off. That's what D. Wills is doing right now. He's tending to his family. He's having a good time. His daughter's doing some things, and he's there enjoying that. All right? But we still have to keep the continuity of what we do. So we have to keep the three-man booth intact. Exactly. We're always winning. All right? So we got Michael. Michael from Inside the Park is going to help us out tonight. He's going to pinch hit for D. Wills. So... Michael, introduce yourself. How you doing, man?
Doing good. Thanks for having me on, guys. And first of all, let me give a shout-out to D. Wills, or should I call him Wally Pip? All right? You never give up your – Lou Gehrig could come up to the plate and not leave for 10 years. All right? That's what happens.
Wow.
He Wally Pipped him. He Wally Pipped him.
He Wally Pipped him.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we have a great show for you all lined up tonight. I'll quickly go through the rundown, and then we're going to get into it. All right? So, we have a special guest tonight. Our special guest is Coach Cecil Youngblood, currently the coach of the Rock County Robins, former coach of the Beloit College Basketball Buccaneers, on the men's team. He's going to be joining us for about a 20-minute interview tonight, so stay forward to look to that. Great man, great interview. He'll be on later. Great coach. He's going to share some insights with us about what he does, how he works with young people, how he coaches. So we're all really looking forward to that. Then we'll have the funky editorial. And in the funky editorial, we're gonna get into the whole Dwight Howard Van Gundy situation. We're going to kind of take a different angle on it, but we're going to talk about that tonight. Then we got Five on the Black Hand Side. We got a lot of topics to cover that's going to range across a lot of different sports. We're going to talk about some early MLB talks. Ozzie Guillen, Tiger Woods, Lamar Odom, Greg Williams. We're going to cover the gamut in Five on the Black Hand Side. So that's going to be you definitely don't want to miss that because that's going to be hot. Then we got our Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. We're going to get into what we have coming up next or what's on docket for next week. And then we're going to go into the shutdown. All right, we're going to get into the shutdown mode and we're going to close out the show. So, again, we want you to join us for the next couple of hours. We're going to hold you down. We're going to keep it tight. We're going to keep it real nice and crispy. If you want to call in at any point tonight, we may be taking calls later on in the show. Feel free to call in at 1-347-989-0844. Again, call in later on when we're in the funky editorial, when we're in the Five on the Black-Hand Side. Those are the better times to call in. If you call in early during the interview, we're going to kind of put you on hold for a while. But feel free to join us and get on with the Real Sports Guys at any time tonight. So, Mike, you guys got a new show, Inside the Park. Why don't you tell our listeners, the RSG listeners who may not have heard, we've talked about the show on our show quite a bit, but some of the listeners, you know, this may be their first time listening or they haven't listened in a couple of weeks. Why don't you fill them in on what you guys are doing on Inside the Park?
Yeah, problem. So we're kind of following the format you've got going on here, but we narrowed the scope. You know, we wanted to do an hour show on baseball, talk about baseball, all aspects of it. You know, we obviously have our hometown teams that we're going to touch on, and unfortunately one of those is the Tigers, so I got to put up with that. But, you know, we try to hit a number of different angles, you know, like this show. You know, we want to get guests on. Coming up tomorrow, in fact, we've got Jonah Carey, who just wrote a book about the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. We'll talk a little bit about that later. So we're going to try to keep it up. It's not just going to be us giving us our opinions on things. We're going to have some good discussions, some good guests, and hopefully have a real interesting hour of baseball every week.
So you guys are going to be doing baseball talk. The baseball season just got underway. What are some things early on that are kind of catching your eye this first couple of games?
You know, it's the first week, you know, so it's kind of like the first week of any season. You can make too much of it, too little out of it. The thing that I'm seeing right now in the trend that I noticed is really more on the financial side of baseball and the contracts that are being handed out to guys and the commitments that teams are having to make to older players at this point just to stay competitive. So I'm seeing those dynamics. Those decisions weren't made years ago by other than maybe three or four select teams. So that's really changing the face of baseball. And hopefully something that baseball has really lacked for a while is player continuity, especially in the smaller markets. You know, your team changed every year, and now hopefully this signals a change where you're going to be able to root for a uniform and not see the name on the back of that change every year at four or five positions. So that's the thing I've noticed this year, and I think it's a good thing for baseball. I think it says that the playing field's getting a little bit more even. As far as on the field goes, you know, I think everyone's, you know, you're a kid in the candy store the first week, right? You know, baseball's going, you know, the no more spring training, you know, it's for real, and it's just a lot of fun this week, and I think everyone enjoys that because, you know, four games into it, the worst you can be is four games out, right?
Absolutely. So what do you think of you brought up kind of small market teams signing players long term and locking guys up. What do you think of the Joey Votto signing? Was that too much money?
So no. Well, reality tells you yes it is, because there's no way, and it's not just Joey Votto, right? So you're talking about Prince Fielder, Albert Pujols, and Joey Votto, the three NL Central first basemen from last year who all inked $200 million contracts 10 years plus, that will be paying these guys in excess of $30 million towards the end of these contracts, right? So there's no way that you can reasonably expect them to be producing at that level. So on some levels, the team's overpaid to keep them. The Reds specifically, because Joey Votto wasn't a free agent until after next year. Having said that, with television revenue kind of going up through the roof, you've got the money to spend, and who's to say that, you know, Joey Votto cost you $22 million per year now, 2 years from now, who's to say he wouldn't have cost you $30 million a year to sign? So in that case, weird as it is to say, you may have gotten a bargain by getting Joey Votto for $22 million a year. And, you know, in the end, it's funny money, it's monopoly money. Baseball is racking in record profits now. So if that's what it takes to sign a guy, then that's what you got to do.
Are there any other things in the baseball world that are kind of, you know, Yu Darvish had a great game. What did you think of his performance the other night?
You know what? I don't know if he had. So Yu Darvish pitched last night, and, you know, I don't think he was exceptional. He did okay. I thought he was very hittable. He threw a particularly flat ball, didn't have a lot of movement on it, so he's going to have to change that. Now, he'll have some advantage as the year goes on, simply because, you know, guys haven't seen him. So I think the advantage always goes to the pitcher the first time through the schedule. You know, the second time through the schedule, and you've seen that with Japanese pitchers and foreign pitchers in the past, that first time through the league, man, no one's got a clue. But, you know, hitters catch up. They do their homework now more than ever. So, you know, any advantage he had from people not experiencing him, not seeing him, that's going to be a short-lived advantage. But, you know, he's a good pitcher, and hopefully he'll do well. The other thing I would mention, too, and I think it's on everybody's mind right now, is Ozzie Guillen and the comments he made today. And it just goes to show you never put a microphone in front of a crazy guy. You just don't do it. I mean, you would never put a microphone in front of yourself at 2 a.m. on a Saturday night. You know, you just wouldn't do it. So why would you give this guy a microphone at that point and ask him a question about world politics? It was just kind of silly. And in the end, it takes away from what he does, which he's a very good baseball manager, and he's not a politician, and he's not a news reporter. So why do we care what Ozzie Guillen says about that stuff, right?
Yeah, you know, and as being a White Sox fan, you know, I was excited about Ozzie going to Miami because I felt like another market would get a piece of what Chicago has enjoyed for so long, from the time when Ozzie was, you know, starting it short to Ozzie as a manager. And, you know, I have a buddy who we text back and forth every now and then with tidbits about, you know, the White Sox. And, you know, I text him on Monday and saying, I think it took about 3 days for Ozzie to piss everybody in South Beach off. So, you know, it's Ozzie being Ozzie. It's who he is. And I agree with you. I think, you know, there's certain things that you can't say, and he has to be aware of that. He's in a different environment. He has a different audience. But at the same time, you know, why are you asking questions about? Yeah, I felt like he was set up a bit. You know, you have a guy who doesn't bite his tongue, and you ask him a question like that because you know you're going to get something interesting. It's good. It's good journalism on the reporter's part because you ask the right question. You got some buzz about an article on baseball in Time Magazine, which probably no one was going to read anyway, because people don't go to Time Magazine for sports articles. But now people are going to read it just to get context and try and understand really what was said. So kudos to the writer.
I would ask a question, too. So there's kind of a double standard that's going to be out there now because there is precedence in Major League Baseball for these type of comments by a spokesperson for the team, right? And so the realist in me, and I say, okay, you know, who listens to Ozzie? Why would you ever ask him that question? Why is that important? At the same point, you're talking about a guy who literally is the most prominent figure in a Major League organization, right? He is basically their PR person, their spokesperson, that has come out and said something stupid, all right? And you can normally just forgive that. But you go back 20 years, and Marge Schott did something very, very similar to this, and it cost her a year. This was an owner banned from the league for a year. So the question I have for you guys is right now, Ozzie's sitting on a 5-game suspension, but in reality, he said nothing that was less inflammatory than Marge Schott did 20 years ago. So is it – Is it two-side adjusted here? Is this a double standard, or is this the right punishment?
I think it's the right punishment. I do think he was kind of led into it. But as I said, I think he still has to watch what he says. He is a representative of a team. The same way you and I represent whatever company we work for, if we're a public figure of any kind, we have to watch what we say because it's going to reflect poorly upon the business that we represent. And be that as it may, Marge Schott was suspended by the league because she has to answer to the league as an owner. That's where that immediate oversight comes from, is the commissioner's office. He was suspended by his team, which I think is appropriate. He got 5 games from his employer, which I think is accurate. I mean, they have a job of selling that team and selling that franchise to the greater Miami population, the greater South Beach population. And a lot of that population is Cuban. And if you go and offend a huge portion of your market base, that's bad business. And their sports franchise, their business as well. And so there are repercussions for that. So I thought the 5 games was appropriate. I'm not Cuban, but from everything I understand about the situation, the comment was a bit offensive to folks and can be seen as offensive to folks. And I'm not going to judge how people should react to it. I think what the penalty he's getting is just. I'm okay with it. You know, I think him coming out and seeming sincere in his apology, I'm okay with that as well. And I think hopefully everybody can move on. I think the Marlins had to do something because they've kind of tried to make this splash. They're trying to sell a new ballpark. They're trying to rebrand the team. And then 3 days in, you have the owner, the coach who you brought in to kind of connect, make a deeper connection with the Latino fan base, which, again, is a really – it's flawed logic, but it made sense to an extent. It's very flawed logic because Venezuela and Puerto Rico and, you know, Colombia and Cuba are very different places and very different cultures. So, you know, I think that logic was flawed, and we're kind of seeing that now. But then you have that person who was supposed to make these connections and make these inroads say something that's very inflammatory and kind of alienate people, which is the exact opposite effect you wanted him to have.
Right, right. And so let me ask one other question, too. Given now that Ozzie's kind of used up that goodwill of a new manager, if the Marlins start out and have a very poor start to the season, how tentative is his job? Which, you know, you would think he would at least have a year leash if this didn't happen. But let's say the Marlins are 10 games under 500 at the All-Star break. Is Ozzie out?
Ooh, that's a good question. You know, honestly, I would say if people are coming to the ballpark, no. If they're 10 games out and they're not filling seats, I think that's what all this hinges on, is they want to fill that new stadium. If they can't, if they're not filling the stadium, then I think they're going to have a problem, and Ozzie's going to have a problem, and he may be on the outs. Because I think they're going to attribute the fact that the team is not winning, plus this whole fiasco at the beginning of the season, to not being where they thought they were going to be as far as bringing in more cash, bringing in more money, because they paid out a lot of money in contracts this year, more money than they usually pay out. So I think they're looking for an immediate return on their investment this year. That's why Ozzie was brought in. That's why they brought in Jose Reyes. You know, they got a new stadium. They're expecting an increase in cash flow. If that cash isn't coming, somebody's head is going to roll for it. And Ozzie may have, unfortunately, just put his head on the chopping block.
I would agree.
So, you know, this is the kind of talk you're going to get on Inside the Park. You know, I'm not a baseball guy. PAZ is more of a baseball guy. Mike is definitely a baseball guy. But Mike is asking us some great questions right now and getting us to really talk baseball in a way we usually don't get into baseball on a Renegade show like this. But we're bringing it tonight. Now, with that said, we're going to transition a little bit into the 5 on the black hand side, get the show going. So we're going to go ahead and jump into that. I'm sorry, not the five on the black-hand side. Excuse my French. We're going to get into the funky editorial. All right?
Fellas, one thing we need to say. Yes, shall we say it, y'all? Yes, Melvin,
right.
Jimmy,
yes,
Coleman,
yes,
Ryan,
yes,
say it.
Yes.
Everybody want to get funky one more time.
So for this week's edition of the Funky Editorial, the real sports guys are going to talk about quote-unquote brand builders. These are those athletes who are really focused on building their brand. You know, when you think about guys who have made conscious moves to try and leverage themselves into different markets or different cities to different teams so that they can further their brand beyond just their game. You think about guys like LeBron James moving himself from Cleveland to Miami. You think about Carmelo Anthony leveraging himself out of Denver into New York to play with the Knicks. And then you got another guy, Dwight Howard, who looked like that's what he was trying to do, kind of backed off of it. And now we're kind of in this really rough spot with his head coach. There obviously were some private conversations that were had between Dwight Howard and the management team of the Orlando Magic. And I'm sure there were some promises made and some things that were made clear that got him to agree to stay there, which is what he wound up doing. He was thinking about trying to force a trade, but he chose to stay. He chose to waive his opt-out option. So now he's in a situation where he's made his bed. Under what terms he made that bed, I think the terms of that are starting to come out. So what we want to talk about now is, and this was brought about by the whole D12, Dwight Howard and Stan Van Gundy situation, where Van Gundy was asked by reporters about his job situation, and he said that, hey, Dwight told him that, you know, he didn't want me to be the coach of the team, and as he's finishing up this statement, Dwight comes over, you talk about an awkward moment, and puts his arm around him, and, you know, Van Gundy kind of like, oh, gosh. And then he kind of, you know, scurried out of the room. And then the reporters began to ask Dwight about the rumors about him wanting his coach fired. And Dwight's like, well, where'd you hear that from? And, of course, they're like, your coach. and Dwight had a moment. And we, as men, we've all been there once or twice in our life where somebody asks you a question, you just go, huh? Because you're totally stumped. And that's where Dwight was. So what we're going to look at in the funky editorial, we're going to talk about how these situations to try and leverage your brand, for most of these guys, has kind of hurt. And then also look at some young guys, a guy like Harrison Barnes, who seems to be very brand conscious. The kid's even got a logo. All right, he's got a logo already. Okay, the kid's kind of brand conscious. How is this going to work? And then another guy to think about when we're talking about leveraging yourself into a better situation for the sake of your brand. Another guy who quiet as kept did this, but it's not being presented that way, Timothy Tebow. We'll get into that in a second. He did the same thing. That's why he's in New York. He knows what he's doing. Right? It's a smart kid. Right? But first off, I'm going to pass it to my man, PhD. What's your take on these guys who've tried to leverage their brand, change their situation, and maneuver themselves into bigger markets? How's this worked out for these guys, and how do you see it working out for or not working for guys in the future?
Yes, this is a very layered subject. And first of all, I had to put my mic on mute because I was just cracking up on the Van Gundy and Dwight Howard thing. Because I saw the same thing you just said. It was very uncomfortable just to watch it. Okay, I can only imagine what D12 was feeling in the moment. And Van Gundy just said, listen, I'm getting this off my chest. Deal with it. So that was very entertaining. So this branding thing is very tricky. And for me, it's kind of the move towards the future. You know, this is where entertainment, basketball is heading towards. With the whole social media, with everything, branding is what's up. And so for me, it's always shake my head because it seems like some guys are more concerned about their branding and their international star power and being a media socialite than their craft, their profession, which is ball. It's balling. And so look at LeBron, for example. LeBron did everything perfect, okay? The Sprite commercials, you know, his shoe line commercials, the State Farm commercials. You know, LeBron was the man. He even did some local spots in Cleveland when I was living there. But guess what? When you're not performing on the court, that's just going to amplify any branding issues that you may have, and it may even overturn your perfect branding. So my concern for these younger cats coming out, like the Harrison Barnes example you gave, these cats need to build their brand on the court first. They need to establish themselves as go-to guys and stars on the court first. You know, we talk about Jordan. Guess what? Jordan wasn't doing no more as Blackman commercials until he had already averaged 35 in a season. He sure as heck wasn't doing that before he was drafted or before he played a game. So, again, it comes back to ball for me, and these kids need to establish themselves as professionals of their craft before they go into this branding thing.
Yeah, I agree. And when you look at guys who have kind of lit their play or whose brand has kind of developed kind of more organically and more naturally, you look at guys like Derrick Rose, Kevin Durant, even to a certain extent Kobe, even though Kobe did try really hard to fit a mold. But those are young guys who are kind of letting things just kind of happen for them and kind of growing into their brand in a more organic way. You know, I just feel like when players really try and push their way or force their way into a particular market, it really, to me, it rubs fans the wrong way because it doesn't feel natural. It doesn't feel like a natural fit sometimes.
Right.
And then the on-the-court chemistry doesn't feel like a natural fit because now you're going into an organization that wasn't built around you. You know, Carmelo left a team in Denver that was built around him. You know, it was built for what he had. And when he left, not only did he go into a situation where they had to deplete their roster to get him, but now he's not fitting in with the pieces around him. You know, and I think with LeBron, you know, going into the Miami situation, he left the team in Cleveland where, though they had less talent, the sum of the parts were more valuable than the parts themselves in Cleveland. And that team was built for him. It was built to accentuate and to enhance the things that he was able to do on the court as far as being a facilitator. You had guards who could shoot. You had post players who rebounded and played defense. You had guards who can get out in pressure. And all of that fit well around what LeBron was, the centerpiece. Now, yes, he felt like he needed more help, but, you know, that's the way it goes sometimes. And then he goes into a situation where he's got D-Wade and Chris Bosh and then a bunch of spare parts. And he and D-Wade are trying to figure out, well, who's going to have the ball. Again, when it happened, you know, you heard it here on this show, you know, we were all pretty adamant that it was going to be a tough situation for them to make work because you had two guys who, since they were seven, eight years old, have always had the basketball in their hands and have never had to play off the ball. And so when you have a situation like that, it's really hard to reteach yourself, you know, after 20 years of playing a game a certain way to now all of a sudden play the game differently. So you have guys leaving situations and going into situations that aren't tailor-made for them and then not experiencing the same level of success on the court, but then further hurts your brand, not only the image hit that you take when you leave a city. Now, in baseball, we had a guy kind of do something similar. I want to bring Mike into the conversation when you talk about Albert Pujols. Do you think Albert helped his brand or helped how people view him, his public perception, or do you think he hurt himself by the way in which he kind of maneuvered himself out of St. Louis and then into, you know, the Anaheim, Los Angeles, whatever you want to call the Angels, you know, wherever they're trying to claim. I don't even know the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Is that what they're calling themselves?
Sounds all right.
Well, he maneuvered himself into California. We just maneuvered himself somewhere in Southern California, in Orange County somewhere. He maneuvered himself out there. What do you think about that? Did he hurt his public perception or not?
All right, so I've got a couple of takes on that. So, first of all, when you're talking about a guy who wants to brand himself, you're talking about a self-promoter, okay? And baseball does not lend itself to that. The last person, I think, to really do that to any great extent may have been Barry Bonds. And in general, as a sports fan, your acceptance of this branding concept really comes down to what type of fan are you? Are you a fan of the team? Are you a fan of the uniform? Are you a fan of the player? And if you are a fan of the uniform, branding is the worst thing that's happened to sports in the last 30 years. And the first person, the last person, in my opinion, to ever do it effectively was Jordan. And that was it. That's a guy who created a brand and an organization around his name without coming across as, let's face it, an ass. All these other guys, when they do this, creating this brand, this me-first activity, which is the antithesis of team sports, all they do is say, I am a selfish guy, and they have every right to go out there and get as much money as possible. That is their opportunity, but do not try to be beloved and rich at the same time, because they go against each other. And when you bring in Albert Pujols to it, you know, I bet you Albert Pujols could walk down Times Square right now, and 9 out of 10 people would know who he is. So therefore, there is no Albert Pujols brand. That guy's on TV more than Bill Cosby ever was, all right? He's on, and nobody knows who he is outside of St. Louis and Anaheim now. But, you know, and I'll go back to this as far as branding as a concept, and I go back to growing up and being a Bulls fan or a Lakers fan or a Celtics fan. You know, if Larry – tell me about Larry Bird's brand, okay? It was the Celtics, right? It was the Pistons. It was the Bad Boys. It was Showtime. And I tell you what, when Jamal Wilkes got traded from the Lakers, I didn't follow Jamal Wilkes. He wasn't part of the Lakers anymore. I didn't care. You know, if I'm a Cleveland Cavalier fan and LeBron leaves, good luck, see you later, I don't care. So, you know, my opinion on branding, and I'm interested to see how you guys feel about it and how it's changed the way we've worked.
Well, I'm gonna kind of jump in. You asked a good question about how we feel about branding. To me, I have a problem with it, again, when it's not natural. Like what Derrick Rose is doing in Chicago and branding himself, he just signed a $200 million shoe contract with Adidas. That's a heck of a lot of money. That's a buttload of money. And he didn't get it by self-promoting. He didn't get it by detracting from the organization or, you know, and he's actually kind of done it by kind of saying, look, if LeBron wants to come here and play, great. If he doesn't, we'll win without him. You know, but he has a very singular focus on becoming a great player and winning basketball games that way. And so I'm okay with it in that sense where the brand is just who he is. He's not trying to. When people try, that bothers me. When Kobe was trying to emulate Mike back when he was younger, it bothered me. Because it's like, you're not Mike. Stop trying to transpose yourself onto that image in people's minds because you're not that. You're not going to be that. And so you should just let yourself develop into what you're going to be. And that's the problem I see with guys like Dwight Howard and Carmelo and LeBron that bugs me. And you know, seeing Harrison Barnes kind of going that way, it bothers me as well. Because I really don't think, you know, that they are what they're trying to present themselves as. You know, it's one of the reasons I felt strongly about Dwight Howard not going to the Lakers, and that was not something that he was going to do because, you know, he's already got the Superman thing and the Superman kind of beef and conflict with Shaq over that nickname, over that moniker. Plus he's in Orlando, plus he's a center, and if he leaves and goes to the Lakers, then his brand doesn't stand out. And to me, that was more important to him than winning. You know, going to the Lakers makes a lot of sense because you play with Kobe, you win. But for these guys, I don't know how much winning plays into it. When you're throwing your coach under the bus, I don't know how much winning plays into it. When you're saying you need better teammates, well, if you're the best player in the league, you go out there and you win games, and that's what you do. And, yeah, you may need some better teammates, but sometimes you got to play better as well, you know.
No,
so I don't have a problem with it when it happens naturally.
Yeah, and I think the most example of that, I'll give you two words, Chad Ochocinco. All right, talk about a guy who was probably the top five most popular football players in the 06 season, and now he's over, but in the last 4 years of his career, disliked, and it's simply because of branding.
Yeah, now, and thinking about that, you know, I mentioned Tim Tebow and how I think, you know, he had an opportunity to go home to Jacksonville. Jacksonville was actually offering the Broncos a better package. The Broncos kind of got some input from Tim, from Tebow, and Tebow said he wanted to go to the Jets. To me, this is a similar situation. It won't be portrayed that way in the national media. It won't be viewed that way. But I think this is Tebow saying, you know what, because Tebow understands who he is. He understands what his value set is, and he understands what he's about, and how that relates to his overall, what he views as his overall mission as an athlete. His mission as an athlete, I think, for him, goes beyond what he's going to do on the field, and he wants to kind of change the way people see faith and understand faith, and that's what he views himself as doing. And more power to him. I'm not criticizing him at all for feeling that way or believing that way, or having faith be at the forefront of what he's about. That's an excellent thing. That's a great thing, and more people need to be like that. I don't mind that at all. But I do think he realizes that if he can do what he did in Denver, in New York, this thing is going to go universal. Forget going global. Forget going worldwide. Tim Tebow will be for the universe. All right? It won't be Tim Tebow for the world. It'll be Tim Tebow for the planet.
Wow.
And that's where Tebow can take it. If he can do what he did in Denver and New York. Because if you look at what happened with Jeremy Lin, if Jeremy Lin does exactly what he did, nothing changes as far as the performance and the stats. If he does that in Sacramento, we're not caring as much as him doing it for the Knicks. And Tim Tebow can see that, just like I can see that, just like you can see that.
I agree with you on that, but I'll give you a different perspective, and I'll tell you why. Tim Tebow is only relevant to this sports world, to this conversation, as long as the misconception that he is an NFL quarterback is legit, okay? And if he went to Jacksonville, he was starting game one. And I tell you what, by game eight, Tim Tebow was not relevant anymore because he wouldn't have a spot on the roster. He'd be gone. In the Jets, this is going to drag out 2, 3, 4 years before someone says, Tim Tebow, you're day one starter, and they figure out he cannot play as an NFL quarterback. 16 games. So this was a business decision at his point, and I agree with you that, yes, if it goes good for him, the New York Jets is a podium that is unmatched. But the more likely thing is he will be exposed as a non-NFL quarterback and not be relevant. There are millions of people who live a wonderful life, their faith, but on the front page of ESPN, the magazine, Tim Tebow does now. Can't play 16 games as a quarterback, he's not there anymore.
Interesting. That's an interesting take. Phil T, how do you feel about, you know, we brought Tebow into the conversation. You know, I know Tebow was good to you last year. What's your take on the Tebow deal?
Tebow's been good to me, fantasy football wise. You know, I think the Jets have opened up Pandora's box, as D. Wills would say. They have opened up Pandora's box, and they just have this animal. They got this animal in Rex, and this culture that he's cultivated within the locker room, within the entire media. And now they brought in, I don't think they could have brought in anybody who would have made a volatile situation even more volatile than Tebow. So I'm just going to sit back and watch this and enjoy this. I'm going to save my analysis. Y'all not going to be able to play the tape on me based on what I was saying in April. I'm going to wait and see this thing play out, and I hope they do the Jets again for Hard Knocks on HBO. I hope so, because I want to see Tebow. I want to see Cromartie try to name all his kids again. I'm just looking forward to it.
Yeah, that was great TV. Kamari trying to name his team, man. So, you know, so we'll play the field team game, and we'll wait and see on Tebow. But again, I think he's trying to leverage himself into a situation, and we'll see how that works out for him. I kind of lean towards Michael. I think it may backfire because if he actually gets on the field, you know, we'll see. The Jets are very Denver-like, though, and I think that's what he also saw was that, you know, if I get on the field in Jacksonville, the defense isn't strong. They don't have any receivers. You know, they have a good running game, but that's it. And it will be all on him. Whereas in New York, he can be insulated and protected by a strong defense. He has a defensive-minded coach. They're run first anyway, so he's not going to be asked to chuck the ball. So if he does get out there, he can do his Tebow thing and hide behind a great defense and just keep games close and try to win some games. And hopefully replicate the success he had in Denver, in New York, and become, again, a planetary phenomenon.
And also remember, he's the white hat in New York. Mark Sanchez is the bad guy. He's the guy they can't stand. He's the guy they want to get out of there. Tim Tebow's the savior, okay? The savior who's not going to get a shot to start game one. So he gets to be the good guy. He gets to be the backup quarterback. No, everybody loves the backup quarterback.
No doubt about that. Everybody does love the backup quarterback. Now, we talked about young guys. And younger players being able to try and understand the branding and understand, because these things go in cycles. You know, we had Jordan and Magic and Bird come along, and those guys had a certain way of carrying themselves that really brought the NBA to the forefront. And then you got to about the mid-90s, and you had a generation of guys who kind of went the other way for a lot of reasons. For a lot of cultural reasons, for a lot of social reasons. They kind of went the other way with your Iversons, your Rasheed Wallaces, KG, Marbury. A lot of guys from that generation kind of went the other way a little bit and were less refined, less marketable to kind of the masses, to middle America. They were less appealing. And then when you got into guys like LeBron and you know, D-Wade and Carmelo, and kind of this new breed of player, they're kind of a perfect blend of those two kind of impulses, where you have, you know, the Magics, the Birds, the Jordans, blending in with that still having some of that street cred of an Iverson or Rasheed with some of those guys. Now you have kind of young guys seeing that and kind of trying to pick up on that impulse and trying to take it to the next level. And you have a guy like Harrison Barnes who, since he announced where he was going to school, has been very much about the brand of Harrison Barnes. But without the necessary results. He's done a good job of capitalizing on hype that's been created around him and kind of adding to it without necessarily. Again, you talked about that myth of Tebow, Michael. You talked about that myth of Tebow, and as long as Tebow doesn't have to play, that myth of what he can do becomes bigger and larger and bigger. It was almost the same thing with Harrison Barnes. Before he played his first game in college, he was an All-American. And as he's played more, his stock has continually dropped, and the perception of what he is has continually diminished. Now, I know PhD, the other night you said that you had an interesting take on. You were going to defend the young man Barnes. Now, I'm going to let you do that. So what I'm saying is, and this is, I'll clarify where my stance is coming from.
Yeah.
Barnes' brand has been hurt, ultimately, by his lack of production on the court, because the perception of what we thought he was going to be has not matched up to what we have seen in his on-court performance to this point. And because of that, where he started, he has dropped several notches from when he came in as a high school prospect. He was viewed as the next LeBron, the next Kobe. And right now, people are saying, well, at best, he can be a Luol Deng or Danny Granger type, which is not even in the same stratosphere as what he was perceived before. But that's what I'm saying. I think his concentration on branding, I don't know yet. But I think that may have had an impact on, and him trying to capitalize on that may have had an impact on kind of his focus and how he plays. He kind of is very bland, not trying to do anything on the court. And I think that's a byproduct of having that mentality of, you know, I don't want to ruffle feathers. I want to just go out, get my points, coast, and move on.
Well, I think Barnes is a very talented basketball player, and you know, I'm not saying that you're not recognizing that. That's not what I'm saying. You know, I think when you look at Barnes, you know, Marcus, you and I, we've been reading Slam magazine since we was in college. Okay, you know, I have not missed an issue of Slam magazine since 1996 when it started. And you know, one of the classic things that magazine does is they select one high school student per year, typically somebody that's heading to their senior year, and they have them keep a hoops diary. And it's been something that they've done. I mean, it's a staple of that magazine. You know, you look at Kevin Love, LeBron, a lot of guys have kept that diary. And Barnes kept it a handful of years ago, you know, this kid out of Iowa. And, you know, whoever keeps that diary, it's almost like you have a bullseye on your back. It's almost like a mini Madden curse, where the last 4 or 5 years, the kids who have done it, you know, haven't really stepped up in a way that they thought they would, you know, Slam and the media thought they would. And then coming into college, it was even double for Barnes, because he was the first freshman ever to be preseason first team All-American before even playing a game. So I think in that regard, this kid couldn't win for losing. He couldn't. He came in with all this hype. Last year, he was an All-ACC player. This year, All-ACC player. But people are sitting there like, wait a minute. You were supposed to be Lewell Cinder, reincarnated. And I'm sitting here like, wait a minute. You know, Game Changer saying that he might be a Danny Granger. Wait a minute. Danny Granger averaged 24 points a game last season. Okay? I look at Barnes as a Carmelo Anthony type of ball player. And I have since the minute I saw him play in the McDonald's All-American game 2 or 3 years ago. This guy is a pure scorer. Watching him makes me think of Kelbert Chaney back in Indiana. And because he plays in a system in that Carolina Blue, I mean, he's not going to rack up the big numbers in college. It's a system that Roy Williams has there out of the Dean Smith family. It's a system. It's the same system that held back Michael Jordan. It's the same system that made Vince Carter look like an average scorer that may not translate to the next level, and obviously we know that wasn't the case. So I'm not highly concerned with Barnes. I think wherever he goes, he's going to be a guy that gets you 19 to 22 points, 3 to 4 rebounds a game, a couple of assists, and be very limited outside of that. But to me, the first time I saw him play, he seemed like that guy.
Now, I agree with you. I do see him as more of a scorer. I do see him more in the Carmelo mode. Now, you also know how I feel about Carmelo and his game.
Yes.
And how I would say that, again, I think there's a stark contrast between where LeBron and Kobe and those kind of guys are and where Carmelo is. And so I think that's where his perception was. I think this is where his perception is now. I think it's interesting that he is a brand-conscious kid. I think that's a very interesting aspect of his mental makeup. And for me, I view that as an additional asset when I think about the trend of where he's at right now. Again, you're right. Being Danny Granger is not a bad thing. You know, don't get me wrong at all on saying that. Being Danny Granger, Luol Deng, those are two very good players. Those are two all-stars. All right? But at the same time, if you're drafting and you got to take a guy with the upside of Danny Granger versus a guy with the upside of Kobe or LeBron, you're taking a guy, you're more excited about the guy with the upside of Kobe or LeBron.
That's right.
And so that whole idea of him being kind of image conscious and brand conscious kind of rubs me the wrong way, because his game doesn't His game to me at this point, and I definitely agree with what you're saying also with your assessment of North Carolina guys. Vince Carter looked like a dude who could just jump at UNC. Antoine Jameson looked like a guy who could, you know, had funny shots around the rim. Rasheed Wallace looked like, you know, a technical magnet. And UNC, you know, kind of, the system does kind of hide what guys show you when they're in the Carolina Blue. And then when they get to the league and the game is more open and the rules are a little bit different and the play is a little bit more free-flowing, you get to see the players kind of blossom a little bit. And I hope we do because, you know, if he is I would like for somebody else to jump into that LeBron and Kobe situation. I'm all for more great players coming into the league. If I'm a GM, I'm a little bit weary about the brand consciousness that this kid has. And if I'm a GM in Milwaukee, if I'm a GM in Sacramento, that may prevent me from drafting him because I know he's not going to want to stay in my market. I know there's a chance, there's a possibility that because he's already thinking about his brand and who he is and what he's about, he may not want to stay in my market for 10 years. He may not want to stay with what we're trying to build and what we're trying to do because we're not New York, because we're not L.A., because we're not Miami, because, you know, we're not a major market in the U.S. So that may also have an effect on his draft stock. And again, history says that's not really a means of operating that's working out for guys.
So I would say
LeBron. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, you guys were going. I forgot I was here. I got a couple questions for you guys. The first one being, when it comes to branding of an 18-year-old kid, isn't it buyer beware? First of all, you know, at what sport do you know what you get with an 18-year-old kid? Basketball more than any, but even then, there's far more bust than there are boons with 18-year-old kids who have their own brand because there's mental issues to go with that. And the second thing, in my opinion, not college level, but the NBA is full of 6'8 scorers. It's full of it. So unless Harrison can hit an outside jumper consistently, I see him being a dime a dozen player because there's a lot of scorers in the NBA, especially guys who are 6'8 and 220, you know. Unless you can turn around and hit that jumper and make them respect that, you know, you're not going to be a big difference maker. You're going to become a system guy. You're going to end up playing for the Memphis Grizzlies because they'll have a high draft pick and they'll pick you, and you'll be another one of those guys that scores a lot of points and nobody remembers. You'll be the next Drew Gooden, you know. Now, obviously, they're not the same players, but someone who can give you 20 points a game, but I can't remember what his name was, you know, that type of guy. So unless he establishes that outside shot, and, you know, can control both driving the hoop and shooting from outside. To me, you know, that's the highest bust type player there is in the NBA because you got to do more than just flash the basket. You're not going to have that height advantage in the NBA. You're not going to have the quickness advantage. You're going to have to do more than that.
A very good point. So he's a kid that we'll see how he turns out. My hope is that he doesn't follow that path because I don't think that path leads to a positive place. I think, you know, athletes want to be conscious of where they are. I applaud guys trying to put themselves in position to be successful, but I also think that, you know, you gotta work out your situation sometimes, and you gotta work with what you got. You can't be so willing to jump ship. You know, the grass ain't always greener.
Game changer went Lion King on us. Simba, that path is not always the path to take.
When Lion King, I gotta get my James Earl Jones on from time to time, man.
Yeah.
So I want to transition out of that conversation. You know, very interesting topic. And we'll watch how that works for Harrison Barnes and how younger guys coming up, how they fall in as far as being trying to build their brand, because I think, you know, you may see we're at a point where we're oversaturated with kind of the right way guys, guys who are kind of doing things the right way, and maybe we're going to get to a point where we're going to get some more rough guys who are rough around the edges, because that's kind of how the cycle of things seems to be developing. So we'll see. Now we want to get into the five on the black hand side. So let's go ahead and jump into that.
Five. five on the black hand side.
All right, this week on the five on the black hand side, we're going to get into quite a few things. The first thing I want to touch on, and I want to bring Mike in for this. He kind of talked about this earlier. We kind of talked about early MLB. I want to bring Mike in, and I want him and Phil to kind of go back and forth a little bit. But I'm gonna throw it to Phil first. And Phil, you didn't get a chance to really touch base with us on your Ozzie Guillen intake. How do you feel about Ozzie, what he said, and the penalty?
Ozzie messed up. He's lucky he didn't lose his job. Again, Ozzie really messed up, period.
So you think Ozzie messed up? Do you think he should have lost his job?
Precedent says no. No, he shouldn't. You know, based on, I mean, when you look at major league managers, they get a lot of leeway. You can go out there and throw a temper tantrum, you know, shove an umpire, get chest to chest with them, have to get restrained. You know, you got guys in the minor leagues who are tossing bases. Think about Lou Piniella. Think about Earl Weaver. Baseball managers get away with a lot of stuff that would never happen in the NFL or NBA. It just wouldn't. So from that perspective, I don't think that he could lose his job. But at the same time, his statements were very hurtful. They ran very deep, especially to those who have been affected by the things that have happened in Cuba, you know, with Castro. So, had he got fired, I wouldn't have been surprised. The precedence I've been hearing is Mike Schott. But at the same time, it was different. She was the owner, you know, when she made the statements about Hitler. So, I think what he got was fair. Now we're kind of in this game where we are trying to figure out how contrite was Ozzie. You know, was his apology enough? Was he sincere? I try to get caught up in all that. You know, when a man steps up and says, I messed up, I'm sorry, I was wrong. You know, here's what I was trying to do, but now I understand it was the wrong move. That's enough for me. You know, ESPN all this afternoon, people are breaking down. Well, and when he was speaking in Spanish, he seemed very, very sincere. But when he was in English, he didn't seem contrite enough. Well, do you understand Spanish? No, but it just seemed that way. Okay, all right, that's real rational. So at this point, I don't think he should have lost his job, but if he does get fired or disciplined further, you know, when you say those things, it happens. But at the same time, the Marlins, they hired him because he is a firecracker, because he says a lot of things before he thinks. You know, how many times in Chicago did he get in trouble for just blowing up, saying things, you know, to get his team fired up, or just running his mouth? You know, so you hired him for a reason. Now, again, you don't expect him to rile up your base like this, but at the same time, you know, the Marlins, you know, I heard on Scott Van Pelt, you know what, you buy a dog, and the previous owners tell you this dog has an issue with biting. You bring the dog home and it bites somebody. Don't act so surprised. So that's my take on Ozzie.
I can dig that, man. I can absolutely dig where you're coming from on that. I'm a White Sox fan, and Ozzie is what he is, and he is what you get. I think he crossed the line. You know, we always talk about line stepping and being a habitual line stepper. Ozzie can be a bit of a line stepper. He usually can toe the line and still be interesting, still be somewhat offensive, still be brash, still be kind of out there. But, you know, he kind of towed that line and kind of pissed off a huge chunk of their fan base. So I just wanted to give you an opportunity to weigh in on the Ozzie situation. Mike and I had at it before, and I just wanted to give you an opportunity to weigh in on it. Now, as we continue to keep going here through the – so that's number one on the five on the Black Hand side. We're going to hit number two. And number two, I'm going to lump two guys together. And, again, I'm going to let PhD have at it for a moment. So what we have here is we have Lamar Odom. Lamar Odom he seems to be a lost puppy outside of the greater Los Angeles metropolitan area. You know, in his years in the league before he got to L.A., he was a little bit aloof, a little bit out there. He got to L.A., kind of found himself a little bit, found a role, found a niche. He didn't have to carry the load. He was on the team where he could show up every now and then, and it wouldn't be a big deal. He was in a good spot. He gets traded to Dallas because he wasn't happy about being added to the CP3 deal. And now we're in a situation where he's totally pushed himself out of that organization in Dallas. Got traded to Dallas, and now he doesn't want any part of it. So where do we go from here? Michael, I'm going to toss it to you. Have you been following the whole situation with Lamar Odom out in Dallas? And what are your impressions on it?
Is that Lamar Scott? Shot? Odom? Who is that? Odom? Odo? Odie? I like that comic strip. Yeah, no. That's with you guys. You're like, man, I wish D. Wills was still here. Anyway, yeah, I mean, I've been a Laker fan since I was a kid. And you know what? Lamar Odom is a sympathetic figure, okay? He's a genuinely nice guy, but he's a special brand of crazy, okay? And that's just the case. Now, if you start thinking about, now, why did this happen? There's precedence for this. He played himself out of L.A. He moped his way out of Miami. You know, let's not forget, I think it was a $56 million contract he signed with Miami, and they just got toasted on and got sent out to L.A. So, you know, if you don't keep him mentally happy, he's going to deep six you. That's it. So I'm not surprised it happened. Do I think he could bounce back in the right environment next year? Absolutely. You know, this is, sixth man of the year last year, correct?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, a good player, special skills, needs to fit into the right system, needs to feel love. Obviously, he didn't fit in with what was going on in Dallas. That's fine. Don't be surprised if he turns up in L.A. next year and does a great job again. So it's happened before, so how can you be surprised by it?
Is it too much Khloe? Is it too much of their Kardashian influence? Yeah, everything they touch turns to wood, in my opinion.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, he's already somewhat of a celebrity. That makes you more of a celebrity. Maybe that lets him be a little bit more temperamental. I don't know what motivates him, you know. And when you've got $100 million in the bank, I imagine you can be your own special brand or whatever you want to be. So that's the danger in guaranteed contracts right there, that you give it to guys who you don't know who's going to show up. Someone even paid Rodman to play after he went nuts. And they kept paying them to play.
I know PhD was chomping at the bit with this one, so I want to pass it to him and let him go at it. Right now we're talking about the Lamar Odom situation. He's been asked to leave. He's put on the inactive list. We clearing out. You got it, man.
All right, so I've been waiting for this one. So Lamar Odom is being paid to stay home. What does this sound like? I mean, all we need to do is have audio or video of him doing squat thrusts and sit-ups in his driveway. And his agent, Drew, you know, Rosenhaus, holding court. This sounds like T.O. when Andy Reid told him, listen, man, you're a big part of this team, you're instrumental, but I need for you to stay home for the rest of the season. I need for you the best thing that you can do. Kind of like Mike Singletary told Vernon Davis a couple of years ago. The best thing that you can do, you know, listen, this is what I told Vernon. Man, the best thing you can do right now, and this is in the middle of a game, is go in the locker room, get showered, and come back and stand on the sideline.
I want winners.
That's right. That's right. So when I saw that, man, I was just sitting here cracking up. My wife was looking at me like, okay, what have you done? I was just so excited, you know. you know, on a serious note, I'm concerned. You know, on a serious note, I'm concerned about Lamar. Lamar, you know, he's been going through a lot. He's married to a Kardashian, having some issues with his pops. You know, I just hope the young man's okay, man. In all seriousness, you know, when a team agrees to pay you millions of bucks to stay home, there's some serious issues. There's going to be some serious ramifications for his career moving forward.
Agreed.
You know, one thing I like?
Go for it. I guess we don't know one thing you're going to like. All right. Yeah, we can dig it. I agree with you, Phil. Odom, I worry about the man's mental health. He's been a fragile cat since he came into the league. L.A. was a good spot for him, as I said before, because he didn't have to show up every night. He could be himself and still experience some sort of success, not be criticized a whole lot. The weight of the team and success of the team wasn't necessarily on him, and that was a good spot for him. He obviously could have did that in Dallas, but I think he had found comfort, and he needed that, and he felt like, you know, he wasn't, I don't know if he can find that other places. I don't know if he could find what he found in L.A. other places. He's a guy who needs a certain level of security, and I don't know if he's going to be able to get that from anywhere else. Now, on the other side of this crazy coin right now, we got Andrew Bynum, who is just losing his freaking mind right now. I mean, he is, you know, he's coming down court shooting threes. He's getting ejected. You know, did he hook up with Rasheed Wallace's weed, man? I don't know. I don't know what the deal is, but he's just angry. You know, he's just silly. He's immature. Kyle Gasol gets dunked on by Blake Griffin, and you see Bynum in the background giggling like a little school kid, man.
Yeah, that was crazy. I mean, he broke some man code right there. That was some serious man/teammate code that he broke.
Yeah, that was definitely he definitely broke some locker room law with that one, man. No matter how nasty it is, man, you can't. Especially if you're on the bench, you can react to a point. All right, I'm gonna break this down to you. For all the listeners out there, locker room code. Locker room code 6, article 7, line 8. Okay? If you are in the bench area, if you are not an active player in a sporting event and something embarrassing happens to a teammate where they get dunked on, they get trucked, they get laid out with a vicious hit, you know, they get a 500-foot home run hit off of them, or they swing and miss on a 106-mile-an-hour fastball, just something amazing happens to your teammate, to your team. If you're on the bench, you can react to it a little bit because you're still human. When you're in the game, you cannot laugh, giggle, snicker, react in any sort of way other than in support of your teammate who just got embarrassed. There's nothing else that you can do.
Listen, we're talking about practice. Not a game. We're talking about practice.
There's very little that you can do. And we've all been in that situation where we've had a teammate who just got dunked on in a real bad way or just got treated in a real bad way on the court. And you're out there and you're like, damn, that was a good play, man. That was nasty. But you can't react. You can't let it happen. You gotta step up and help your teammate out. Your teammate is laying on his face because the dude just dunked on his back and kicked him all in his numbers. I mean, Blake Griffin kicked Pau Gasol in the numbers on his way up to the rim. And Bynum's snickering and laughing. It's just hilarious. So we're gonna keep going through the five on the black-hand side. We're going to touch base on that in a little bit. But right now, I want to transition and bring in our special guest for the night. We have Cecil Youngblood here to join us. So we're going to bring him in right now. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with Cecil, Cecil was a college men's basketball coach at the Division III level at Beloit College. And now he is currently, he was there for, I think, 10 years. And he experienced quite a bit of success there, had some really good teams. And then, you know, he moved on. He began to work coaching professional women's basketball with the Rock County Robins. And this past year, he coached the Robins to a championship in their league. Cecil also has been served as a mentor to myself, to PhD, to Devon, a friend and mentor now that we're adults. He's a former professional football player, played tight end with the Kansas City Chiefs. He's also an accomplished author as well. So if you would give a round of applause to Cecil Youngblood.
Wow. You got a full house?
We always do, Coach. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm better.
Fantastic. Now, Coach, you're an accomplished men's basketball coach. You know, I want to get right in. And what was the transition like for you going from coaching men's basketball at the collegiate level to then not only switching gender, but also switching from collegiate to professional and coaching women's professional basketball?
Well, first of all, I just want to say my biggest accomplishments and probably things I'm most proud of or blessed about was having you, Marcus, come to Beloit and play basketball for me and getting to know you and watch you grow up and being a part of an important time in your life. That was probably one of my biggest and most prized accomplishments. Along with that, though, was beating Bo Ryan out in recruiting you. So you don't beat Bo at much, so that was really a blessing. So, it's interesting because not too long ago I had an opportunity to talk with Al Brown, who was the assistant coach for Pat Summitt at Tennessee for all the years that she won. And I had asked him why Pat had been so successful and, you know, with her team and why they were so good. And he just basically said because she doesn't put up with the girly stuff. They're not women's basketball players, they're basketball players. And that's how she coaches them, and that's how she treats them. And if you remember back in the day, those teams, that's how they played. You know, it wasn't girls' basketball, it was basketball. And that's kind of the way I've always felt about it, you know, in my mind. And you don't know this, but I did coach. I was an assistant women's coach for a while at Augustana before I went full-time with the men's program. And that's kind of how I approached it. I can tell you this, the real big difference, and I was blessed to be able to coach some girls that played in the WNBA and that played at some major universities, but quite honestly, the biggest difference is, even with all that, the girls don't question you as much as guys. They listen. You know, they don't challenge you. And a part of it is they're a little bit older, obviously, and they've learned through their success that, you know, if you're saying the right thing, they'll listen to you. Now, that's the real deal. You got to come correct. You can't come stupid, or they won't listen to you. But that was a good thing about it is that when they know you, they know what you're talking about. They listen and they do what you tell you to do.
Hey, Coach, can you share with us kind of some of the core principles and values of your coaching philosophy?
Well, yeah. I mean, it goes back to some of my mentors and some of my coaches. Preparation, execution, and repetition. That's the main thing. Now, you of all people, Marcus, know that the other mainstay is that you got to be in shape because there's a famous quote of mine, I can't remember who said it, but fatigue makes a coward of us all. And fatigue is an excuse not to execute. It's an excuse not to be prepared. And so we want to do away with that excuse and make sure, first of all, you're physically fit, because then you don't make those mistakes in crunch time. Your mind's clear to execute a play at a particular time. So obviously that's something that I fundamentally believe in, is that as you get physically in shape, you get mentally in shape. And then after that, it's just getting yourself prepared for whatever the situation might be, whatever the circumstance might be, as best you can, and then executing. And the way you execute is just through repetition, over and over again. When it gets boring, when it gets monotonous, you still execute, do the same things over and over again. Then it becomes second nature in a game. You don't have to think about it, so your reaction time's faster.
Coach, you talked about some of the things that you've done at the men's level and now at the women's level. What is a highlight? What is one of the highlights of your coaching career thus far?
Oh, wow. Well, obviously, as kind of a correction, we entered the league in the WBCBL, the Women's Blue Chip Basketball League, which is a national league. It's got 55 teams in it across the country, 2 years ago. And in our first year, we set the goal to win the national championship, and we did. And then we followed it up this last year and won it again back-to-back, 2 years in a row. So obviously that's one of the highlights of coaching, because, you know, I've had championships in rugby. I was part of a football program that won 66 games in a row, won 4 national championships in a row, played in 3 Final Fours, took another team, was an assistant coach on a team in basketball that went to a Final Four and won. So had a lot of things that have happened, but probably the 2 back-to-back championships are probably the highlight, because we did it with 2 different teams, and it was a challenge. 2 different teams, 2 different groups of players, and something I'd always wanted to do was to win a national championship in basketball, and I unfortunately had never had an opportunity to do that until the last couple of years. So, because basketball is kind of near and dear to my heart, more than any sport that I've been involved in.
Yeah, I'll apologize for not being able to bring you one of the rings, man. I wanted one too.
Well, I know that. I know. I feel you.
We tried, man. We tried to make it.
Oh, yeah. Yes, we did. Just missing a few pieces here and there.
Yeah. So, you're an avid sports fan. We all know this. I always like to talk sports with Coach. So, Coach, NBA season is in full go now. How do you see this all playing out? Who are your favorites as we hit the stretch run and begin to start to get into playoff season?
Well, I mean, I can't help myself, for one thing, but I've been a Laker fan for a long, long time, and I always think the Lakers at some are going to be there. Even in the down years, I just feel like they're going to be there. And this year is weird. I mean, it's a shortened season. That's understandable, which gives a little bit of that cloud over it, you know. But the teams are weird. I mean, right when you think Miami's going to get on a roll, they get beat by the Bucks. You think, of course, the Knicks were kind of, you know, flying by the seat of their pants, broke out, everybody got excited about them. I think everybody's trying to find somebody to be excited about right now. The only team that's just kind of lurking in the weeds, just keeps kind of winning and keeps kind of getting better, is Oklahoma. You know, everybody talks about them, but nobody wants to see them as really being the one, you know, to go to. But they look pretty sneaky. They could come up behind and bite somebody real bad if people underestimate them too much. But they're the ones that are kind of just winning a bunch, lose a few, winning a bunch, and people write them off. So, I like Durant. I like the team quite a bit. So I think they're a team that you really have to keep an eye on. But it's a weird year. You know, you just don't know. The Bulls look good for a while. Derrick goes down. The Bulls look better with him down than they did with him playing. So it's going to be interesting. I think Oklahoma is a team that people better look out for.
Coach, we were just talking about Lamar Odom, you being a Lakers fan. What's your assessment of that whole Lamar Odom situation?
I'm going to be honest with you. I have never been a Lamar Odom fan. I thought I think you hit the nail on the head. You couldn't rely on that brother from night to night, okay? I mean, I don't know how he managed to get sixth man of the year other than he was playing with Kobe Bryant, because there were nights where he just wasn't on the floor. He just disappeared for no apparent reason. What he's doing in Dallas is no different than what he did with the Lakers. It's just that they had a few more people they put up with him. But, yeah, I think that comment you made about the Kardashians is about right. I mean, his mind is not there. He's not mentally tough. That's what it is. The man's not mentally tough. Too many sweets, I think. But he's talented. When he wants to play, quote-unquote, he plays. But you cannot call yourself an NBA player and have that behind your name when you want to play. I mean, that's your livelihood. That's what you do. And that's why he's always disappointed me, is that he doesn't come to play every night. You know, if he did, he could be serious. And so that's why I wasn't surprised what happened in Dallas. He's just not that kind of player. He's not that go-to kind of guy. You know, you just can't rely on him. So I'm disappointed because he is talented. I'm disappointed because there's so many other guys out there that work their ass off that don't get what he gets and don't have his talent. But, yeah, he's never been reliable. He was just fortunate to be with the Lakers.
Now, Coach, one last question, and then I'm going to kick it to Phil T, and he's going to ask you a few questions. So one more question for me. What book or TV show are you really into right now? You always like interesting things. You're an interesting guy. You kind of dabble in a lot of things. So what book or TV show are you interested in right now?
Well, I got to be straight up. I mean, quite honestly, the book that I'm really into these days is my Bible. The more I've read it, the more I've been more involved with it, it kind of has a message for me every day, and so I'm really doing more studying around that, and it means a lot to me and what I believe in. But another book that I've been reading is a book called A Hope in the Unseen by Ron Suskind. It's a story about a young man in the inner city in Washington, D.C., one of the toughest parts of town. A young brother who goes up against a lot of things within the school, trying to fight his way out from the situation he's in, between the neighborhood, being picked on, and all those kind of things, and manages to get his way out and heads to Ivy League school, and what he achieves on his way out and how he gets there, because, you know, I work with some high school kids, and I'm trying to get a feel and some relate to them on what it's going to take for them to be successful. And this is just a really good book that I'm hoping to do some teaching on and some sharing with some kids and even the kids of Beloit College to give them a sense of what it's really like and the kind of things that you know, our young men have to come up against when they even talk about going to a Beloit College or places like that. So that's kind of what I'm into right now.
You're listening to Real Sports Guys on RealSportsGuys.com. We're here live with Cecil Youngblood, former professional football player, current assistant dean at Beloit College. Now, Coach, I'm going to bring you in. I got a couple of questions for you, but for the listeners out there that may have missed the transition, Marcus the Game Changer was an excellent college basketball player, and Cecil Youngblood happened to be his coach at Beloit College. Coach, I'm going to ask you to pretend that you're working for Scout.inc, and you got to put together a scouting report for the Game Changer for Marcus. I'm going to let you go. Break down Marcus's game, intangibles and tangibles.
What? Scouting report on Marcus?
On Marcus.
Oh, okay. Tangibles and intangibles, huh?
Yes, sir. You
mean like back in the day, because I know, you know, his game might change a little bit by now, right?
Yeah, I've got this spring I used to have. I'll admit that, man. I don't have the spring. I'm smarter. I don't have the spring.
Well, I don't know. You, well, tangible things, obviously. Long, very quick, anticipates well. Decent jumper, needs a little work, a little consistency. Probably can move it out to the three with a little work in the weight room. But has the work ethic to do that, so that's not going to be a problem. Pretty good handle, weak left hand, needs some work there too. Still, work ethic is there, and that's the main thing. Willing to work is a big thing, and that's one of the intangibles. Very coachable, very knowledgeable, and always wants to get better. Kind of things that you really can't coach, that just has to be there. Upside, huge. As far as at our level, a steal, definitely someone that could turn a program around. So,
nicely done. Sound like a young Hubie Brown. Very nicely done. So, Coach, we got your resume up on our site at realsportsguys.com. You are All-American at Augustana in basketball and football. But a lesser-known fact for a lot of folks is that you were recently inducted into the Quad City Rugby Hall of Fame. Can you talk about your experience with the game of rugby?
You know, I say I've been blessed in my life with a lot of things, and that was one of the unique experiences that helped to take me in a lot of directions. I think my introduction to rugby and playing rugby actually prepared me for the brief stint and opportunity I had to play pro football. Probably made me a little more physical, which was needed. A little more confidence in the physicality of the game, which was needed. Plus, it afforded me some opportunities I never would have had. I've traveled across several continents, several states, several countries. Playing the game, I was able to learn how to play from some of the best players in the world, actually. I was trained by New Zealanders and even some South Africans who at the time were the best players in the world. So it's afforded me a lot of different things outside of just the sport itself, because it's a very demanding sport. Taught me how to really get fit and not pretend to be in shape. And I've been blessed with some success. I mean, we won a national championship on our sevens rugby team, and I had an opportunity to play for the United States touring team for a season or two, across the country, across the world for that matter. So it was quite an experience. The first time I got on a rugby pitch, I had no idea what I was doing. They put me out on what's called the wing, and I said, "What do I do?" They said, "When the ball comes to you, run." And that was it, that was my introduction into rugby, and they weren't kidding. You either run or get hit, so I ran.
Now, Coach, over the last couple of weeks, we've had folks like Alan Sack, who wrote Counterfeit Amateurs and won a national championship at Notre Dame, Eric T. Mays won a national championship in Michigan back in 98 and is now got his PhD and working at Harvard. You fall right in that line of, former athletes, coaches that have done an excellent job, had a distinguished career. But now you're an associate dean at Beloit College. And, I was a student while you were there, and I know the impact that you have on young people. Can you talk about how your experience in athletics has prepared you for your position in college administration?
Well, definitely. Athletes, and I know all you guys relate to this, because most everything we do, we can relate to sports, because it's part of who we are. That's why you guys are where you're doing now. The ability, hopefully, to communicate, to motivate, inspire, push when necessary, and hug when necessary, it's all things that you learn as an athlete, and being involved in athletics. Because there's always that moment, obviously, as a coach, where you have to push. And as an athlete, you just got to push yourself past a certain point. There's always that point as a coach where you've got to know how to motivate, what to say, figure it out, understand your players, understand the circumstances, understand the surroundings to make decisions. And all of those things are incorporated, I've found, in the work that we have to do as the dean of students, but also in coordinating and collaborating things around campus. I mean, you have to bring people together in order to be successful, you know, and to continue to have that success, because we were very successful, and Marcus will relate to this, is when the team, not to be trite, but I don't want to say on the same page, but were in the same thought process as one another. That's when everybody's thinking the same things and are motivated by the same things. And so, I mean, to me, that's what athletics is all about, and easily transferable in almost anything else that you do because of that. Not to mention the discipline and the respect that goes with it.
You're listening to Real Sports Guys on realsportsguys.com. We're live with Coach Cecil Youngblood, the head coach of the national championship, Rock County Robins, as well as an associate dean at Beloit College. Coach, we got you on the air. I've got to ask you about this whole Greg Williams, New Orleans Saints, bounty thing. What are your thoughts on this entire situation?
Well, I think what's happened to the Saints, first of all, let's get it straight. No one wants someone to go out and end someone's career, okay? You know, that's not what we're all about. That being said, I think the Saints are just victim to modern technology, because I'm telling you, I'm just going to be straight. I've sat in many a locker room and been part of many a conversation and have been told directly by coaches, okay, on the professional level and on the college level, if you can put them out, put them out. Okay? That what they said, you know, I listened to the tape from Greg Williams. I didn't hear anything in there that was any different than I have heard coaches say. And Lord forgive me, I may have said, you know, figuratively, you know, or otherwise. And I just think if you listen to even some of the pros now, they'll tell you. You know, I heard Mike Golic the other day say he was told the same thing. Okay? Now, as far as putting a bounty out on it, if you're going to get paid more, and maybe that's taking it a little, you know, a little too far. But I think, like I said, I think they're just a victim of technology, because I know if there could have been microphones in the locker room of the Steelers back in the day, or of the Raiders back in the day, come on now. You don't think that they were being told stuff like that, or that there might have even been some money passing hands? I'm not saying. That's just what the name of the sport is. And let's be real. People pay to go to those games to see people get knocked out. All right? I mean, don't fool yourself. They want to see people get hit hard. Okay? So, like I said, they just fall. Does any of it make it right? No, but I think they put the hammer down way too hard on Greg. We're talking about he's gonna be out of coaching forever, you know, and you suspended a coach for an entire season. That's a bit too harsh. That's just trying to make yourself look good. That's just promoting yourself more than really trying to send a message about, you know, what's wrong or right. Now, that's just me, okay? Like I said, I don't condone anybody hurting anybody or ending someone's career, as it were, but they're just a victim of a new society where you can't say boo. Everybody got an iPhone, so you just got to keep that to yourself, you know.
So again, you're listening to Real Sports Guys on realsportsguys.com. We're here live with Cecil Youngblood. Now, Coach, the last question I'm gonna have for you before I send it over to Marcus is around your book. I read your book, The Training Camp, a couple of years ago, and it was a page-turner. For the listeners out there, Coach's book is somewhat like HBO's Hard Knocks. Before there was a HBO Hard Knocks training camp, Coach talks about his experience trying to make an NFL roster with the Kansas City Chiefs. Coach, can you talk about that experience and just the process you went through in terms of getting your book up and running?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think they must have read my book. I was watching that show going, and I didn't
exactly.
get paid. So,
that's right.
But, no, for me, it didn't start out to be like that. It's just when I came back, you know, you think about the what ifs, right? And I there wasn't a night that I remember during that time before I wrote the book that at some point in time during the night or during the week of sleeping, I would be dreaming about going back. You know, it still had it in me that somehow there was something that just wasn't resolved or whatever it was, but I was dreaming about it all the time. So I literally got up in the middle of the night one night and started writing. Just reflecting back, you know, kind of thing. Just trying to clear my head, trying to revisit, going through the what ifs, and trying to figure out in my own mind what had happened when I finally decided I wasn't going to go back and they released me for the last time. And so I wrote, and the more I wrote, the more exciting it got to be. And it wasn't a matter of just writing it for the heck of it. I mean, it was just writing for the heck of it with no intention of really what I was going to do with it or where I was going to go with it. And I happened to get in a conversation with someone that had some work published before, and they were trying to think of, they were coming up with a new project, and I said, you know, I started talking about sports and my experience. I said, you know, I just started to write some ideas down, some thoughts I had about what went on and how I felt. And this person said, hey, how much you got written? I said, oh, I don't know, maybe 2-3 chapters. And they said, well, let me read it. So I let them read it. They sent it to their publisher or editor. I got a note back with a note on it. It said, you know, this is good. Finish it. And I got it. I was like, I just planned to write it. I didn't, you know. So I worked on a little more, and so that process started, which was a bit, that in itself was a very interesting process, I'm going to tell you. Writing, send it to an editor, rewrite, all that stuff. I didn't know I was going to get involved with all that, but it was a fun experience from that point of view as far as learning. But I do know this, when we put the kind of the what I thought was the final piece, the final rewrite of the book together and sent it in, it was like a weight was off my shoulders, and it wasn't from writing. I have not dreamed about, thought about, or had any inclination of ever being a pro football player since. It was kind of cathartic. It was kind of like, okay, I put this thing to bed, and I'm done with it, you know. And like I said, it was kind of a catharsis, because as I was writing it, as you read the book, like I said, you kind of get a feel of it going, you know, picking up speed and hopefully some of the emotion that was going on during the scene. And that's how I felt when I wrote it. And then once it was out and gone and I was done with it, it was a little relief to be done with it, but it was also like, oh, okay, I got that out of my system. So
now, Coach, I have one follow-up question before I send it back over to Marcus. We got to give the audience a teaser out there. I remember when I first picked up the book, The first paragraph, you're sitting on a flight headed back home. Can you reflect on that moment?
Yeah, that was a and probably you read it in the thing. That was a bittersweet moment. Okay, it was a sad time because it was a culmination of all that hard work, everything that you've done, and for months and months of training camp, or months and months of preseason, all the way down to the end, where it all hits you that it's over. Part of you wants to believe that, you know, it's like a grieving period, part of you wants to believe that it was for nothing. Part of you wants to say you gave it your best shot, you know. But it's also like when you've had that loss where no one knows what you're going through, and you really don't want to be bothered. You know, you expect people to know what you're going through, but they can't know, and so you don't want them. You don't want to be bothered. You want people laughing around you. You don't want people crying around you. You know, you just soon be on the plane or be where you're at by yourself. But there you are. So you kind of stuck with all that, you know, where you just all that emotion is welling up inside of you, and you can't. No one else knows what's going on inside your head at that point. And so it was just kind of, it's tough.
All right, you're listening to Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com. We're on with our guest, Cecil Youngblood, assistant dean at Beloit College, former NFL football player, former college basketball coach, current women's professional basketball coach. Is there anything that you don't do? We'd like to thank Coach for coming on with us and spending some time with us. It's always a great opportunity to touch base with him. As I said before, he's a personal mentor who's now a friend, and I think PhD would say the same, a mentor who has become a friend and someone who we confide in and look to for advice at the same time. So thank you for having us on, Coach. We greatly appreciate you coming in and gracing us with your presence for the last 20, 30 minutes. Man, we can keep this going. You know how we get together when we talk, man. So
Hey, I miss that, too. We're going to have to do something about that. I do miss that. I miss you guys. I mean, seriously, as I've told you all before, and I'll say this publicly, I just hope that I had as much as much inspiration or motivation or whatever for you guys is as you had for me. I respect you, and I think the world of you, and I always have. And it's just been an honor and a privilege to know you and to continue to follow your careers and what you're doing. And I really feel blessed for that. So thank you.
But thank you very much, Coach. You have a very good night, and we'll have you back on soon. We'll have to do this again for sure.
Definitely. Peace.
Peace. Take care. All right, that was Coach Cecil Youngblood. Again, joining us on the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com. Make sure if you want to catch that interview again, you hit us up on our website, and you'll be able to download the audio if you want to hear Coach Youngblood's interview. Bringing Michael back in. Mike, a few things Coach Youngblood talked about I'd like to get some of your opinions on. One thing I want to really touch on is his perspective on the Greg Williams comments and situation. Greg Williams, you know, the tape came out with him saying, you know, they wanted targeting certain injuries that 49ers players had before the Saints played the 49ers this past year in the playoffs. What are your opinions on kind of Coach Youngblood's perspective, which was, you know, the Saints are more the victim of modern technology, you know, the fact that it's 2012 and their cameras and microphones everywhere, they're not doing anything that people haven't done in the past and probably aren't still doing today, but they're kind of being vilified as being somewhat of a rogue franchise.
Yeah, it's an easy answer to say it's been going on for a long time, and all of us have, you know, I've played college sports, you know, we've all played college sports, and we've seen motivational speeches and things like that in the past. You know, I kind of have two immediate responses to it. The first is, just because everybody's doing it doesn't make it right, okay? That's because you got caught. Don't be sorry because you got caught. Be sorry because it was the wrong thing to do, okay? And it's not the right way to motivate players. But, you know, I understand how it happens, why it happens, and I understand that it does happen, and it will continue to happen. The bigger thing that, to me, is at play here is what a failure by the NFL Players Union to let that type of activity go on. And there's team union reps on that defense and on that team that were aware that was going on, that knew that you're intentionally injuring players and costing their livelihood in a sport unlike any other where the contracts aren't guaranteed, the careers are short, and the injuries are lifelong debilitating, that the NFL Players Union dropped the ball just so drastically here that I think that if that was known, anybody who was a player rep on the Saints during that time should be fined, should be not allowed to hold office. And I would also say, D'Amore Smith, if that's going on your watch, you need to be out. So, I mean, that's my opinion. I agree people go to races to watch crashes. They go to football to see hits. But you know what? If you're one of the players that gets injured, just so, you know, for the matter of entertainment, it's not a joke. And they need to be protected better. And the league failed on this one.
Some harsh words there, Mike. Some harsh words.
Well, you know what? Doesn't make it right.
Yep. Yeah, I can't argue with that sentiment. I think I might have to disagree with Coach on that. I think the penalty was appropriate, and appropriate in the sense that the league is being sued by former players because of injuries they sustained playing the sport. So the league has to, one, come out and say, look, we're doing all we can to make sure that the sport is safe. Now, I agree with you again. If I'm the league, I'm pointing at the players' union and saying, your players are hurting themselves, are trying to purposely hurt themselves, and then they're coming back and trying to sue us. When they're creating a system where they're actually going out and trying to go above and beyond to injure themselves, to injure other players. To me, the players' union has some interesting grounds. They're between a rock and a hard place because they want to protect the players that are involved. Then also they have to protect the players who are targets, and they have to remove this from the game if they're going to try and promote themselves as this body of people who's being exploited. Because you can't be exploited when you're going out there and you're purposefully trying to inflict injury upon each other. We already know it's a violent game, and there's a level of violence that exists within the game. But to target a guy, a weakness in his, because you can do that strategically. Like when I play basketball, if a kid had a bad ankle. Well, if I'm playing basketball now and I know a guy just turned his ankle, I'm going at that foot, I'm going at that ankle, but I'm not gonna drive by him. I'm not gonna try to, you know, hurt him. I'm not gonna step on it. I'm not gonna like try and kick him in it. But I'm gonna go by him in that way and make him have to use that ankle. You know, so there's strategic things that you can do within the game to take advantage of an injury that a player has. But when you talk about attacking somebody's head or specifically going after somebody's Achilles, to me that's a little bit over the line. You can point it out and say, look, so-and-so has an Achilles injury. We want to jam him at the line of scrimmage. We want to make it really hard for him to get off the line. You know, we want to really make him have to use that lower body leverage to see if he can generate the usual force that he generates. I get that. I'm totally cool with that type of a conversation. But to just kind of throw it out there and say, hey, we want to attack that, to me, that just rubs me the wrong way. Again, I'm not a football player, though. I'm a basketball player, and so I have a different orientation to sports. And to
right.
How I view the contact and things like that. So I'm going to defer to the two football players in the conversation and let you guys kind of share your opinions on it, because I have a very different orientation to it, because that's not my sport, that's not my game. And I know that guys who do play that sport have a different mentality and a different outlook on that particular. And I think that's where Coach is coming from.
Right. And what I would tell you, the reason the penalty was so harsh is, what do we do with our sports heroes now, right? We put them on a pedestal, right? They become role models. They become entertainment figures. We emulate everything they do. And youth football in this country is huge. And so, you know, I played college ball, and now I coach a youth team. And don't think that those players, those kids, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old kids didn't listen to that and go, oh, that's how you do it in football. That's how the pros do it. You got to hit them in the head every time. That's what they're not going to take away a year's suspension. They're not going to take away that. They're going to take away, the Saints coach said, hit him in the head every time. And that's going to be the lasting legacy here. We already have a major concussion issue with football amongst all age levels right now. And that just highlights the reason why, in my opinion, and I've really gone 180 on this, in my opinion, that kids underneath the age of 12, I'd say almost even 14, have no business. Well, I just think there's too much we don't know, and there's too many coaches out there of even youth teams.
Yeah, so I think he's going to say there's too many coaches out there with these youth teams that are kind of targeting kids. And I can agree with that. PhD, what's your perspective on it real quick?
You know, I agree. You know, T.J. Duckett was on our show. T.J. Todd Duckett, who played in the NFL with the Falcons and with the Seahawks, he was on our show a couple of weeks ago. And I really liked his take. You know, since we were playing Rocky football, like Michael was saying, guess what? There's an incentive. There's an incentive, whether it's to be the first person down there to make contact with the ball carrier, if it's the first person to make a big hit. But like R.J. Page mentioned, you know, during that show, you cross the line when you start messing around with people's livelihood. You cross the line. So if that was the intent, I have a problem with that. But back to my initial comments a few weeks ago when this thing broke, I said Dick Butkus and Deacon Jones are sitting somewhere like, I don't get it. What's the big deal? This is what coaches were telling me for years to do. I don't get it. So, again, it's a different day. It's a different age. And to Coach Youngblood's point, it's a lot about liability. The NFL has to cover its butts, especially with all these different suits that are coming at them in terms of retired players saying that the NFL didn't do everything they could to protect them. So, again, I think all that plays into it.
All right. So, as it develops, we're going to keep an eye on that whole situation. Again, you know, concussions and things of that nature and kids with youth football that Michael brought up are all kind of really serious issues right now that people are really beginning to kind of scratch the surface on what we know and how we should handle those kind of injuries. So, it's a far-reaching issue that the NFL is trying to wrap itself around and get under control. Right now, we want to go into the Resistance Musical Dog of the Week. So let's do that. Now, we're going to get into our Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to the sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So, what did the Real Sports Guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today. All right. Mike, I'm going to go to you first for your dog of the week. First thing I want you to know, man, is that
we need more dogs.
All right, I will step to the mic. My dog of the week is Justin Verlander. And Prince Fielder and Miguel Cabrera, pretty much the entire Tigers roster for starting out 3-0 against the Red Sox. You know, everybody knows I'm a Yankee fan, but I grew up in Michigan. My only allegiance to the Yankee is Derek Jeter. But it's always good to see the Tigers doing their thing. So my dogs of the week are the Tigers, and if I have to pick one, it's Verlander for doing his thing on opening day.
Okay.
Another Michael. Man, I'm full. There's too many Tiger fans around me. Every show I do, there's Tiger fans on it. I swear. Based out of Detroit. Wow. All right, so I'll keep it in baseball. And you know what? I'm going to go with a guy who ended last year with a World Series ring on his finger, and this year has started off just at a pace that I didn't think he was going to be able to keep up. But David Freese of the Cardinals has had an outstanding week. Cardinals going 5-1. Not my favorite team, But to see a guy who's come out and he's hitting, you know, 444 after five, you know, it's five games, I get it. 444, he's got three home runs, he's got 10 RBIs. He's really hitting well, and he's hitting it out of the five hole for the Cardinals. So, you know, he doesn't – his protection right now is, you know, Yadier Molina, you know. So those are numbers you'd expect out of a three or four guy. He's putting them up out of the five hole, doing a great job this week. So my dog of the week, David Freese.
Okay. David Freese, an ensemble of Detroit Tigers. I'm going to go with Carmelo Anthony for his performance Sunday against the Bulls. Tremendous clutch performance. Carmelo is a guy that I get after all the time about his play and his game and a lot of things. But I watched the game. I'm a Bulls fan. Watched Carmelo just dismantle him in the fourth quarter in the last 3 minutes of the game. And it was a masterful performance. So hats off to Carmelo. PhD, can we get a preview of what we got on deck for next week?
Yes, sir. We got a great show coming up next week. First of all, I want to thank again Cecil Youngblood for coming on. He dropped some serious knowledge. It's always so good to listen to Coach, listen to his perspective on different things. So thanks again for coming on to the show. Next week, April 17th, we have Justin Page coming on. You guys originally heard Justin on when he came on for All-Star Weekend and gave his top five observations. Well, like I said, Christmas is back. The NBA playoffs are right around the corner. So we're going to bring Justin in to be our guy, to be our ear on the streets, to let us know what's going on with the NBA playoffs. Also next week we have Lance Leipold, the head coach, football coach at University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. Go to our page, realsportsguys.com, to see what this guy has done. He has been at UW-Whitewater for 5 years, which is a Division III program. He's had 72 wins and only three losses, which includes four national championships. In that fifth year, they lost in the championship game. So he's doing an outstanding job there. We're looking forward to have Coach on. They'll be starting their spring practices here in a couple of days. And then on the 24th, we're going to bring back Eric Hamilton, our fantasy football guy that did an awesome job this fall and this winter for us. The NFL draft coverage is going to start on the Real Sports Guys, so Eric will be back to give us some early hits on fantasy football guys. Now, we have a big show scheduled tomorrow on our Inside the Park show, which Mike is a member of with Hank and RJ. Mike, why don't you tell us about who's going to be on the show tomorrow?
Yeah, not a problem. So really the highlight of tomorrow's show, we've got author and columnist Jonah Carey is going to be joining us. Jonah wrote the book, The Extra 2%, How Wall Street Strategies Took a Major League Team from Worst to First. So basically, you know, think of it Moneyball, but for, you know, the year 2010 and analyzing how, you know, Tampa Bay Devil Rays, their strategy, vision, that was stacked against them. So we're looking forward to having him on and talk about that. He's also working right now on a book on the history of the Montreal Expos, which is a fascinating organization when you look at the amount of talent that came out of that team. Obviously never stayed there beyond the first couple years, but they certainly were doing some good things there. So we got that. It's the first week of baseball, so there's a lot of action to talk about. So we're going to have a good time tomorrow night. We'll have a lot to talk about. Hopefully everyone can tune in and participate.
All right, fantastic. So be on the lookout for Inside the Park tomorrow night. They're going to have a great time. They sound like they got a great show lined up for you all. So make sure you get on and you come back tomorrow night to check them out. Real Sports Guys, we're going to go into the shutdown real quick. I'm going to pass the field team and then pass the mic. Shut something down, fellas, and then we're going to close out the show. PAD, what's your shutdown?
I'm shutting down Coach Tyler Perry. Or keep on saying he's not going to the NBA. We will see. We will see.
Mm. Michael, what you shutting down this week?
What am I shutting down this week? I'm shutting down my hope of my Reds winning the championship early. I'm shutting down. But apparently that's the Tigers bandwagon for me, so keep a spot open on the bus, guys.
All right, and for this week, I'm shutting down Bobby Petrino, along with the University of Arkansas. They shut him down as well. Bad form, man, just bad form. He's supposed to be a leader of young men. That's all we got to say. That's the show for this week. Real Sports Guys, hit us up on realsportsguys.com. Check us on After Hours. We're going to talk a little bit of Tiger Woods. We'll also kind of keep on rolling. We'll talk about some NBA. So make sure you check us out. Otherwise, thank you for listening. Check us out next week, 8:30 to 10:30, Tuesday nights. Peace. Welcome to the Real Sports Guys After Hours section, Renegade Radio. We're going to hold you down for another additional 10 to 15 minutes tonight. Again, D-Wills is off doing D-Will things. I got PhD and Michael from Inside the Park with us tonight. In this After Hours section, we're going to talk about the Masters and Tiger Woods. You know, Tiger going into the Masters this week was viewed as a heavy favorite. And it was something that we discussed on this show. We talked about it last week, and the guys convinced me that he should be the favorite. He should be the favorite. Well, he didn't play like a favorite this weekend at the Masters. So let's talk about that a little bit. Michael, what's up with Tiger? Can we, as the sports viewing public, put our trust in Tiger as a favorite anymore?
No. It's the same reason that, 32-year-old defensive linemen get big contracts when they were great 4 years ago. It's done. It's gone. The edge and the advantage he had a couple years ago is not there. It's not there. And if if anyone gives you the opportunity to go Tiger at the field and you say Tiger, we need to talk, because I'll take that bet every time. Every time.
PhD, last week you were heavy on the side of Tiger being a favorite. Are you still there, or has Tiger's play swayed you in a different direction?
I'm not still there, but I'm still there. Take that one and try to chew on that statement. So honestly, I think for Tiger, all it takes is for him to have a dominant week, and everybody's back on the bandwagon. Because we know what his potential is. Jack Nicklaus, he went a whole 3 or 4 year span without winning a major during his prime. So in that regard, this is a guy that we often model Tiger's career to. So I'm not overly concerned. D. Wills brought up an excellent point last week. Guess what? Tiger may not be winning, 2 to 3, 4 tournaments per year, but he might win one or two, which will put him in the top 10% of the field. So I'm not overly concerned. He had a disappointing weekend. There's no doubt about that. When he had his opening round and he was in contention, it was like the energy around the Masters stepped up. It was electric. Okay, just the anticipation all week of what Tiger would do made the environment just different. The first round, he's still in contention. It was electric. When he fell out of contention, by day two or three, all of a sudden, you stop getting these breaking news alerts on ESPN, bottom line. Tiger is good for golf. So I'm convinced that he still has some dominance in him.
And see, this is where the contrarian in me comes out, because I was questioning it last week, and you guys swayed me. I listened. I took in what you were saying. It made sense. I was like, yep, that fits. That makes sense. That works for me. So I jumped on the Tiger as a favorite bandwagon. on Saturday afternoon, it hit me and it dawned upon me that Tiger is different. Tiger versus the field doesn't work anymore. Tiger is a part of the field now, which still makes it, he's at the top end of the field, but Tiger versus the field is a paradigm we can't use anymore. That's one thing. The other thing is that the whole idea of Tiger going into a favorite, it's kind of like when Dwight Howard walked up after Van Gundy walked away, and they was like, "Who told you that?" And you know, he was like, Dwight Howard was like, "Who told you that?" And so then I thought about it. Who told me Tiger was a favorite? Oh, ESPN. Why? Because they got it on.
You do not miss an opportunity. You do not miss an opportunity to give us a D12, man. Hey, another plug. Another plug. Listeners, realsportsguys.com. Go to our featured guest page. Scroll down about halfway until you see Dwight Howard in a Globetrotter uniform. Click on that, and the Game Changer had a 150-second rant on D12. Don't get you a coffee tomorrow. Just pull it up on your iPhone tomorrow. Don't worry about the coffee, the five-hour energy. That rant will get you going. All right, back to you.
Oh, man. But that's when I realized that, you know, the reason we thought he was a favorite, maybe it's not because he was a favorite, but ESPN needed him to be the favorite for this week because they had the Masters on, and they were broadcasting the Masters. And we all know Tiger moves the needle when it comes to broadcasting golf. And if Tiger is not playing well, if Tiger is not in contention, then people don't watch. And so ultimately to me it seemed like a farce. It seemed false. And I, as of today, I feel Tiger as that guy that we knew is not that guy anymore. He's a very good golfer. But again, it's the difference between Harrison Barnes being projected as LeBron and Kobe to Harrison Barnes being projected as Danny Granger and Lou Aldang. Lou Aldang and Danny Granger still are great NBA players, both all-stars, very good basketball players. Hell, I want to be one of those guys, all right? But there's the stratosphere is different. The air is different from where Danny Granger and Lou Aldang live in comparison to where LeBron and Kobe live. And I think Tiger and Michael, you said it, he's lost that edge. Golf is such a mental game. It is such a mental game. And Tiger doesn't have that edge. Not only doesn't have that edge for himself, he doesn't live in the minds of his competition that he like he used to. That in itself was probably his biggest edge, was that he lived in the minds in a special place, in a very dark, frightening place. That's where he lived in the minds of his competition. And he doesn't live there no more. He doesn't live there anymore. They're not afraid of him.
I would add something else to that, too. I think the landscape of golf has changed a lot as far as the type of athlete that's involved with it. So let's talk about when Tiger was dominant. And oftentimes you're measured by how good of a golfer you are by the people you beat, right? And so let's talk about, you know, Davis Love III. Let's talk about Phil Mickelson before he won anything. And he, you know, 10 years of futility. Let's talk about, you know, Davis Love III. Guys like that who, you know, Sergio Garcia is another one, who in the end, you know, Mickelson turned into be everything you hoped he'd be, but those other guys just weren't there. I mean, Palmer had Mickelson, had, you know, Watson, had a lot of wonderful golfers around them that made them better. So maybe it's not so much Tiger getting worse now. I believe he's not playing as well. But let's give some other guys some credit. These guys coming up now are not, you know, it's not the Walrus out there anymore. No, it's not Chichi Rodriguez. These guys are athletes. Bubba Watson looks like an athlete, and I bet you if you take the golf club out of his hand and put a basketball in it, he's still going to be an athlete. And that was an edge. As much as the mental edge, he was a better athlete than anybody on that course 10 years ago, and that's not the case anymore.
All right, so I'm going to throw this question out to both of you, and then we'll wrap up the after-hour section, but I want to hit this question. Tiger Woods, is he – Two questions. Is Tiger Woods going to catch Jack Nicklaus? PhD.
Yes.
Okay. Why?
Because he's Tiger.
Okay. Michael, is Tiger Woods going to catch Jack Nicklaus?
No.
Why?
Because he's Tiger.
I saw that one coming.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go no. Why? Because I think he's not the greatest golfer of all time anymore at this point in his career. He is a good golfer. He's a very good golfer who will have moments where he plays like the greatest golfer of all time. But I agree the competition is stiffer now. There's more comp out there, and he doesn't have that mental edge that he had. And he's starting to break down. He's not the same athlete he was 4 or 5 years ago. He's not the same guy. He's having little tweaks and injuries. This was a guy who really never got injured before a little incident with his knee. Never really got injured, never really, you know, had to worry about injuries. And now, you know, you see him coming up with different nicks and bruises. He had to leave a golf tournament a couple weeks ago with an injury. So, you know, that, and I think that's a different element of being more of an athlete now. Now your body's a little bit tighter, wired a little bit differently. You're lifting more, you're doing more things that golfers traditionally been doing. Maybe we don't see golfers having as long of a span of playing golf because now it's becoming a more taxing activity on your body than it was maybe a couple years ago, because the competition has gotten stiffer. And you have to go at it that much harder. So I'm gonna say no.
Right.
Next question.
The question is Tiger Woods the Mike Tyson of golf? A guy for a limited period of time could have been said was the best ever, but failed. You know, fell really quick, and then all of a sudden is he's an anomaly. I mean, is he Muhammad Ali or is he Mike Tyson?
He ain't Mike Tyson. He may be Floyd Mayweather. He ain't Mike Tyson.
Really?
I think he had more longevity than Mike. I think
okay.
Tiger has a ton of longevity. I think Tiger is a proven commodity where I still don't know what to make of Mike Tyson's run. seriously.
It was entertaining.
It was. If nothing else, it was entertaining. But I still don't know what to make of it. But I feel like Tiger had a sustained level of excellence for quite a while. And it is... That's undeniable. But I don't know if he can maintain that at this point in his career.
Makes sense. And does this make you guys wonder, so a couple of years ago there was whispers that Tiger was big into human growth hormone, steroids, that he was the most juiced player on the tour, and that gave him the advantage. And now that there is drug testing in golf, all of a sudden Tiger's injured a lot, not doing the same thing. Does that raise any concerns?
Wow. I got to tell you, Michael, you've been doing an awesome job tonight. I want to thank you for coming on. The last two questions were bangers. So the question about Tyson, okay, great question. I'm going to say no, he's certainly more Muhammad Ali. Tiger's been doing this since 96, man, to 2010. It's 14 years. he was getting it done. The performance enhancing drugs. You know, I've been in denial in terms of Tiger, but I think it's really time to start thinking about this. I think it's time to be considering that this may have been an issue. You know, there were some rumbles. Tiger kind of really slickly, smoothly got out of that conversation. But, you know, he's been linked to a doctor who's been linked to steroids, performance-enhancing drugs. You look at the performance. Ugh, man. Ah. Yeah, I can't even get to myself to say it, so I'll just stop right there.
You know, that's an excellent question, Michael. And, again, thank you for joining us and filling in. You did an excellent job pitch-hitting, man. And this is a tough question, but, you know, again, I'm all about conspiracy theory.
no.
And, I'm gonna go ahead and say I'm in on this one, man. I felt that, and I'm gonna have to do some digging, man, because I think I said this a while, when it was coming out, we were on air. We were doing a show when it was coming out. And I said that, you know, this is something that we might want to keep our eyes on. Like, I'm going to have to do some digging, man. I'm going to pull it up next week. I'm going to dig in the archives and pull that up next week. Because I think, yeah, man, I think I did mention this, man. And I'm going to pull it up because I think it was when he was getting in all the trouble and he checked himself into the sex rehab or whatever.
Game changer. You got to get Yahoo on it. You know, Yahoo just took down Petrino.
Yahoo, you know how I feel about Yahoo, man. Man, Yahoo, I think, didn't Yahoo take down Baylor, too? Isn't that who getting Baylor?
Yeah, they took down Baylor. They took down the U, Miami U. I mean, man, Yahoo got some serious journalists, man.
I'm telling you, man. Next time we're looking for somebody overseas, we looking for an international crook, criminal, you know, man, I guarantee Yahoo has some intel for Obama when he's caught Osama, man. I guarantee Yahoo hooked him up with some of that intel. Yahoo's gangster, man. They get the stories. They get the stories. When Yahoo comes sniffing, man, you shut the doors. Yeah, we're going to have to get Yahoo on this. If they're not already on it, we'll have to get Yahoo on it. But, Tiger, that's a crazy link, man. And like I said, I'm not, if it came out, I wouldn't be surprised in the least bit. There are some people who, if they got linked to performance-enhancing drugs, I'd be shocked. Tiger's not one of them. I'm gonna have to put him in that category for me. If they call him out on something, I was more shocked when Ryan Braun got called out. I think there was more of a surprise with that than there would be with Tiger getting caught, or linked, or even accused of using performance enhancing drugs. So with that, we're gonna wrap up this edition of the After Hours. Again, we'd like to thank our guest, Michael, for joining us tonight and filling in for D. Wills, who I know is somewhere off in good spirits. Thanks to my brother, PhD, for holding us down again, as we always do, keeping us working in good condition, in good order. Thank you to Cecil Youngblood for stopping in tonight. And thank you for all you listeners and downloaders. Make sure you download this section. This is a real good conversation. A lot of real provocative points being brought up tonight about Tiger. So take care. Enjoy. Be well. Check us out next week, 8:30 to 10:30. Real Sports Guys, Renegade Radio, realsportsguys.com. Hit us up on Facebook. Catch us on Twitter. We're all over. Peace. NBA talk, man. This past week, trade deadline passed. A lot of small moves, no big moves, though. We've been waiting on Dwight Howard to finally figure out where he was going to wind up. Unfortunately, Dwight decided that he was going to not only stay in Orlando, but waive his opt-out option. Dumb. Extra dumb. See, this Dwight, Dwight Howard, if you're listening out there, and he's probably not, but I'm going to act as if he is. Dwight Howard, if you're listening out there, bro, come on, Big D. D12. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? You've been talking all this jazz about, I want to go this place. I got this list. Add this team to my list. Add this team to my list. I want to go win championships. And at the end of the day, you're going to wind up staying. And not only are you going to stay, you decided that it would be best if you waived your opportunity to make as much money as possible. Now, I'm trying to figure this out. I'm really trying to understand this. You must be seriously committed to Orlando. And I get that. I can dig that. I can understand that. But why weren't you this way all along? See, this is why we don't mess with you at RSG. This is why we don't ride for you at RSG, Dwight. You just don't bring it the way you should. You're just not hardcore the way you should be. We want our 7-footers tough. We want our 7-footers stone face like a king. They don't rattle. We want our 7-footers to be able to score like the Admiral. You don't give us that, my man. Not only do you don't give us that, you don't got that dog in you, man. You don't got that dog in you. You know, I don't know what to make of you right now. I don't know what to make of you. But this is what I'm going to tell you, Dwight. This goes out to you, Dwight Howard.
Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cats. We need more dogs.
We need more dogs, man. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cats. We need more dogs. So, Dwight Howard, you want to be a dog. You want to hang with the RSG crew. You got to step your game up, son. You got to step it up. NBA talk, man. This past week, trade deadline passed. A lot of small moves, no big moves, though. We've been waiting on Dwight Howard to finally figure out where he was going to wind up. Unfortunately, Dwight decided that he was going to not only stay in Orlando, but waive his opt-out option. Dumb.